was filled with crack. It was filled with what we considered zombies walking around. Not just my friends, but other people from other areas in the city. Everybody is getting money, and the working person is considered sweat. They were beat on the crackhead, beat them into a coma. They would take their clothes and take their shoes and make them walk home without their shoes and things like that. He could love me to death, but if it's going to put him out, then he got to do what's best for him. And that means I'm collateral damage.
Hello and welcome back to the Almost False podcast, where I interview regular people with incredible stories. Today's guest is Corey. He grew up in the ghettos of New Jersey. He got involved in all kinds of crimes as a teenager and young adult. We had an amazing conversation talking about his upbringing and the issues that people like him faced growing up. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so let's not wait any longer and get right into the story with Corey.
So we were the family in the hood that everyone came to eat at our house because they didn't have it. So mind you, this is the 80s. So you got to take your mind back to what the 80s were in these ghettos. And it was just crack. It was filled with crack. It was filled with what we consider zombies walking around. You know what I mean? People so high that they don't even know what day it is. So their children suffer. So my mother was the type that bring everybody together. Okay, you haven't seen your mother in 4 days. You come here. Be here. So I have brothers. There's no biological, you know, I have no blood between us. But they're still my brothers because my mom raised them.
How many people were living in that house? Because you said you were bringing people in. Were they there full time or were they there for a little bit until their parents came back to normal?
Yeah, so if I had to give an educated guess, I would say probably between 20 or 30 people in and out. Wow. Whether they be cousins or just neighbors or...
Because their parents weren't able to take care of them.
Truth, yeah.
That's sad.
And like I said, sometimes it was strangers. I would meet friends and I was always taught to share everything. You know what I mean? So I would give them clothes, give them sneakers and things like that. And they would come by the house and my mom would just embrace them. And she makes sure they get fed. She makes sure that they receive some type of love, you know, because a kid without any type of love turns into a monster. You know what I mean? So she wanted to make sure that they knew somebody loved them. And that they had value in this world.
How did you feel as a kid having all these people around? Did you like it? Was there a part of you that was jealous because attention was being divided between these people?
No, not at all. I was the one bringing them in most of the time because I felt I was just always taught to share and to give and to be kind and to be charitable. So I would bring them in like, Mom, you know, he don't have a place to go. He doesn't have anything to eat. He has eaten. Or he hanging around these guys, I know where that's going to go. Let's see if we can help him out. And she was always game.
And how long did that last? It started, I guess, from when you were born, probably the point where you didn't even notice or...
Yeah, from the time I was born, it was like cousins. Say my grandmother's sister passed away. She now brings in their children. So now my cousins live with me, you know, and she'll raise them up. Until they're ready to go out on their own. So I never knew nothing different. So if you went to school, then they would help you pay for it. If you're going to work, then you worked and you pay a little rent here until you're able to save up enough money to, you know, get your own place and things like that.
So after high school, you wanted to go to college? You wanted to pursue education?
Yeah, because I was a football player. So I had abundance of opportunities to play ball. So my first college I went to was in Newton, Massachusetts. My SAT scores wasn't that good, so I had to go to a JUCO. But I just squandered the opportunity. I did the first 2 days. And then, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but they had cell phones. When they first became, like, when everybody could have them, right? They was called OmniPoint. So I got a call on my cell phone that this guy had $4,500 for me. Like a drug deal. And I left football camp and left college to go make that deal.
So you had this great opportunity to go to college and you squander all of that by taking a deal to go deal drugs. I'm struggling to find how that can happen. Can you explain a little bit more?
Instant gratification, man. You grow up in an environment where your parents are telling you one thing. They're showing you one thing, but we still living here. All my friends are selling drugs. All the people that I consider successful sold drugs, and they had a lot. They had hundreds of thousands of dollars. They had houses. They had cars. They had things like that. So I wanted that, you know? I didn't want to work hard like my mom because I felt like that was hard work. I knew I can get it easier over here. So the mindset of somebody that's seeing one thing but being told one thing, you're going to go where the easiest route with the most potential to earn.
So even though your parents raised you right and they were relatively right, comfortable, at least for the area that you lived in, the influence that had the most impact on you was the one from your friends. And you wanted to be like them. You wanted to do what they did more than like the way right, that your parents taught you how to grow.
100%, because they had freedom. Like, my mom worked for the county, so she had a schedule. I didn't want no parts of that. I was a stubborn kid. I was very spoiled. I was physically gifted, so it wasn't too many people that could tell me anything. I just wasn't going to listen. I was going to do what I wanted to do. Think about it, though. This is the mind of an 18-year-old that was heavily influenced by the streets, man, because as soon as I step outside my door, that's what it is. So truthfully, my mom raised me to be what I always say is a Spartan, fighting for anything and for everything. Even though, like I said, she's educated, a good woman, but our environment said you have to fight. So not just my friends, but other people from other areas in the city, everybody is getting money and the working person is considered the square. So what's cool to me is those guys. It wasn't what my mom was doing, what my dad was doing. As silly as it sounds, it just wasn't that, because that's the underdeveloped mind of a 19-year-old. Because like I said, the mom can tell you one thing, but if I look around and all I see is poverty and just desolated areas, what are you really telling me? So I can do well enough to be a little bit above these people, or I can go over here and get a gang of money and have that freedom that I want and do what I want to do.
And so you got into that at 19?
Full time, yeah.
And was it a friend that invited you?
Not at all. I was already, so this is how it goes, right? The city is separated by wards. So you got the first ward, fourth ward, so on and so forth, right? So you grow up with these guys from 5 years old playing outside. Playing outside turns into maybe they're stealing bikes or whatever. We're from Jersey, which is stolen car capital. So then they get into stealing cars. So it's like their criminality is progressing. I'm going right when they're going left, but I'm still with these guys. So anything they do, I'm guilty by association because, one, I'm a fighter. And everywhere we go, I'm a frontline guy.
So you're kind of in that life a little bit, one foot in, one foot out. Correct. And then after your first year of college, that's when you made the transition to go full time. You're like, no, I'm going to do this now. Screw school.
Correct. Yeah.
How is that for you?
All right. So the person you're looking at today looks at that and be like, yo, that's BS, man. You should have known better, boy. You taught better. But that person that jumped into that for the excitement and for the camaraderie and for the money, the instant gratification I talked about, like where I'm from, you're judged by your appearance. So if you don't have the newest this and the newest that, if your car isn't up to a certain standard, then you're considered nobody. So it was very exciting. It was scary. And then I wasn't really one of them. I never quite fit in because in real life, I'm a closet nerd. I go home and I read and I freaking go watch Dawson's Creek while these guys out here shooting and dealing and all that crap. I'm in the house, you know, listening to freaking Beethoven or something like that, some type of jazz to just calm my nerves. I'm in the house meditating, but when I go outside, switches on and I got to be this guy. So it was exciting, but it was scary as well because, you know, I never quite fit in.
And what does that mean in that environment?
I didn't have the makeup that they had to hurt people for no reason. In this environment, you have to confront things head on. You can't let anything go. Right? As crazy as it sounds, somebody can say something to you and you let it go and they'll think that's okay. And they'll come back the next time and they'll berate you in front of your people and totally embarrass you. So you have to make an example. So I didn't want to hurt anybody. I didn't want to punch a crackhead for stealing. I expect a crackhead to steal because that's what he's going to do to get out. So I didn't want to beat him up or take his shoes or just totally emasculate this man because he stole, you know, he tried to set me up and things like that. I planned ahead for stuff like that. If you were a crack addict, I thought you were going to steal, rob, or kill to get your drug. you know? So I already thought that was going to happen. So I wasn't surprised when that did happen. And these guys, they were beat on the crackhead, beat them into a coma. They would take their clothes or take their shoes or make them walk home without their shoes and things like that. I didn't have that in me. I didn't have it in me to rob anybody or shoot anybody or anything like that.
I imagine that probably had some sort of negative impact on your image, on how seriously they took you. Did it?
Yeah, it was partly a negative impact. But at the same time, I shared the information. So I was taught that, this is one thing I was taught, it's a wise man's duty to teach. So if I know something, I'm going to have to share it with you. So I was sharing so much positivity with them that they wanted me around because I was the one positive one.
Yeah, they were happy to have you around for this, but essentially what you're saying is that there's no true friends.
In that game, no. He could love me to death, but if it's going to put him out, then he got to do what's best for him. And that means I'm collateral damage. I'm a casualty. So it's certain people that you don't have to necessarily worry about snaking you, but 90% of the people, they will do what's best for them and leave you out to dry if it calls for them.
So at the end of the day, you're on your own.
100%.
How was that for you emotionally? Being alone, not having anyone to go to. Maybe your parents were helping you, but at the same time, your parents didn't necessarily embrace the lifestyle that you wanted to be in at that time.
Totally did.
So how was that emotionally?
So I have brothers, right? I have two biological brothers. One of them that's older than me, and one of them that's 16 years my junior. So he's one that I raised as my own. Even though it's my mother's son, I raised him as my own, so I couldn't go to him. But my older brother is only a year and some change older, almost 2 years. So everything I was going through, he was going through as well. So I always had him. And then one of the other guys that I was telling you about, he's one of my brothers. No blood between us, but I know he's going to go for me like I'm going to go for him. It's like having two biological brothers right there with you. They can't come home and tell my mom something happened to me and it didn't happen to them and vice versa. So I was never alone. I never felt alone. But the emotional part is, damn, I thought we was cool. You know, like we done broke bread together. We done, you know, went to the same schools. We played as children in the dirt. We did this. And this is how you treat me. You know, so that's emotionally taxing, man. And I'm somebody that expresses my emotions. I cry if I need to. I don't give a darn. If I'm upset, I'll cry.
That's great. And it's probably very important to do that. 100%. Obviously, you don't know. Well, you might know the other side of it, but you've probably seen the effects of repressing your emotions in some of your friends, of the people that you were hanging out with. And in my experience, it doesn't lead to a whole lot of good.
Oh, it turns to an explosion. Like you bottle it up. There's something small happens. It's some ancillary problem you have. And then boom. And now that turns into a whole ordeal when you could have just expressed yourself to this person. So, you know, I might say something to them and they might not comprehend or they might not feel what I'm getting at, but that's going to lead to violence because that's the only way in our environment to express yourself most of the time is through acts of violence. That's what people respect.
What do you think could help? Because there's a lot of talk about things like this and it's obviously a very real issue, right? And I don't think it's talked about enough, people that grew up in situations like you did.
Right.
What's one thing that you think could help? Obviously, it would be a pretty big puzzle to fix all of it because there's roots that go like pretty deep. But if you had to pick one thing that you think could at least help, what would you say?
Just have conversation with the people and let them know that somebody is out here to help them. Not give them anything, but give them opportunity so they can get jobs and they can work. Because if everybody was working, you won't have all this crime, you know, because you can go back 40, 50 years. The Black family unit was together and people were working. And, you know, my grandmother owned her house. My granddad owned businesses, bars and things like that. So where did it go wrong is the question.
That's a good question.
I know where it went wrong.
You want to talk about it?
Yes, sir. So during the, like I said, the late 60s, you had the assassinations of Black leaders, right? Right after that, you had women's liberation. So the strongest part of that Black liberation was the Black woman. But now they got a new fight. So now you have a bunch of men gathering with nobody to organize. Women are the best organizers, man. I don't care what no guy says. So when crack came in, those same women that were on the front line for the black movement and the Women's Lib movement got hooked on this new drug called crack. And that decimated the family because they were the head of these families. So now you have kids that's disenfranchised and they don't have a mom present. Even if she's there, but her mind is not right, she's not present. But they say idle hands does the devil work. What happened to a kid with that much idle time? They start looking outside and they start seeing all of this poverty. Now they get a poverty mindset. So like I said, these kids looking around and all they're seeing is decimation. They're not seeing the doctor that lives down the street from them. They're not seeing the school teacher that lives next door to them. They're seeing drug dealers. They're seeing dope fiends. They're seeing crack addicts. They're seeing all of that, you know? So that's where the disconnect came. And then it was just a cycle.
Yeah, and that cycle probably happens for a few reasons. But like you said, in the environment that you're in, you don't see anyone being successful.
Not at all. Nobody that looks like us.
Right. But there are like black people from that neighborhood that are successful. Exactly. But they leave. And so the kids that's never have that example of what to look up to. So what they look up to is the drugs and that lifestyle. And on top of that, there's the trauma that's passed down generationally. The parents grow up in that environment. Yes, they have some trauma because of everything that happens. And then they pass that down to their children. Right. And it's more of a cultural thing that happens in these neighborhoods that they feel like they're trapped.
And now, even on a different level, trauma is passed down cellularly as well, right? Like you getting high and you're pregnant. You think those cells don't transfer to the baby? You think the baby comes out with none of that trauma? That baby was born with that trauma, man. You understand what I'm saying? So it's so multi-layered, man, but that's where the disconnect started.
So it's the combination of that being passed down generationally as well as your environment, because you didn't have that passed down from your parents, but because of your friends, you ended up in the same place. However, you talked about education earlier. Because your parents raised you right, eventually you ended up straightening your life together and you got out of that. So education seems to be very important, especially in your life and your story. So you want to touch about how that affected you later on.
That's the key to, and when I say education, I don't always mean formal. Because, you know, like we have things at our fingertips now where we can educate ourselves on just about anything. So with me, reading made me strong. Learning made me feel strong. You know, I didn't care about a degree or anything like that.
And it's important that you say that because you talked about education before. And I want to be very clear on that because you talked about it briefly. Education does not necessarily mean school. It means information, right? Because some people might see education and be like, well, school's too expensive. I can't get that. I can't do that. No, like you can educate yourself with the people that are around you. You might have elders that know a lot more that you can learn from.
Yes, sir.
Or even today, online, everything is available, right? So these courses, if you want to go to school and have that setting and you're able to afford it, you can. But if you can't afford that, you can also get that same information online. And I think it's a mindset. Education is more of a mindset because nowadays, everyone has the opportunity to.
Right. And that's 100%, man. Because you can take these skills that I learned in the streets and they're transferable into different arenas, man. Because I've taken a lot of that skill set into my professional life.
If you had to give advice to a young person today that's in those marginalized community and neighborhoods, what would you say? If you had to give them one piece of advice based on everything that you've been through, what would be the most important thing?
I would say that you are the architect of your now. You'll also be the architect of your future. Don't look at the past because you're going to get sad. Don't look too far in the future because you're going to get anxiety. Deal with the right now. Had I known that as a child, this is what we thought. We thought that these are the cards that we dealt and we can't give them back. For what reason? God don't love us or something. Like, why are we in these type of environments? That's not it. So my advice to a young person in underserved or marginalized community is be the architect of your life now. You aren't your circumstances. Whatever you want to attain is there for you. And you have living examples, not just sports guys or entertainers. there's living examples out there. There's doctors, there's lawyers, there's engineers, there's cops, there's teachers, there's the freaking guy who cuts meat at the supermarket. If that's what he wanted to do, then he's a success. Because, you know, to me, success is the realization of a worthy idea, right?
That's great. That's great. And it's, I think it's important that people like you give an example and give back, which I think you mentioned that you're actually doing to the communities where you grew up and the friends that you grew up with, and you learn things and you share the knowledge with them. And that's how communities right. can grow together, right? Because if it's everyone for themselves, then there's going to be someone that makes it out. There's going to be someone that, even if it's not, because a lot of people think they see like the athletes or they see the actors or they see whatever's on TV, right? But there's right. a lot of other people, like you mentioned, that end up having a very successful life and happy families. But right. if it's everyone for themselves, they won't want to come back and share. And I think that's the most important part, to be able to share and to be generous and not keep everything for yourself and not think that everything is a transaction. Because when you right. see life as a transaction, you're looking for something back from other people. Right. And if you're right. looking for that, then you won't ever share what you have. And if you don't share what you have, they won't share what they have. So right. it ends up being something that is detrimental to everyone.
Man, if you look in the neighborhoods I'm talking about, every relationship is transaction. It's what have you done for me lately, man? You could have gotten a guy a job 6 months ago, but he asks you for something right now, you just can't make that request. You're no good. So every relationship there is transactional. It's not built off of just love and true camaraderie and things like that.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing, everything that you said, is when you talked about love.
Right.
It's understanding that love is doing everything for someone else without expecting anything in return. And if there was more love in the world, it would fix most of the issues that we have. So I think that's the root cause, and that's something that we can all focus on. So much for listening to this episode of the Almost False Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please make sure to leave a like and subscribe for more interviews like this. If you found this content valuable, please share it with a friend. It really helps us out a lot, and hopefully it will help them too. If you want to be on the show, you can go to almostfalse.net and submit your story there. We would love to hear from you. With that being said, I hope you have a great rest of your day and stay blessed.